This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Rob Ferret will be back on Monday.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
November is Native American Heritage Month, and this year also marks the 80th birthday of one of Wisconsin's best Native American advocates.
Ada Deer is a member of the Menominee Tribe from Kenosha. She was the first member of the Menominee Nation to graduate from UW-Madison and the first Native American to earn a master's in social work from Columbia University.
Ada also became the first woman to chair the Menominee Nation in Wisconsin and then went on to head the United States Bureau of Indian Affairs under President Bill Clinton as the first woman in that position as well. At 80, she is still deeply involved in Native American advocacy and activism. Ada Deer joins us now. Welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon. I'm very pleased to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. And certainly anyone who has lived in Wisconsin for any length of time, I think, has heard about you and your work here in Wisconsin. But your history goes back so long. And you really credit Eleanor Roosevelt with helping to inspire you to grow into this activist role. When and how did you meet her?
I was a student here at the university, 1956. I was 21 years old. I was recruited to attend the Encampment for Citizenship, which is a leadership development program founded in 1946 by two civic-minded people, Al Black and Nanny Politzer. And the idea was, since many of the people there were fresh from Europe, the Holocaust was on people's minds, and some actually were survivors of the Holocaust. Never again. And so what do we do? Well, establish youth programs so that some of the youth of the world could be educated. So when I went, there were 100 college students from across the country, and we had workshops, we had field trips. It was in New York City at the Ethical Culture Society Fieldston School, which was located at the end of the subway line there at that time in New York. And we had workshops. I chose to attend the workshop on segregation and integration. And the reason I did that was I knew that I didn't know very much about Black history and culture and issues and so on, other than Blacks were brought here for slavery, and that lots lived in the South, and they were being killed and oppressed there. So I thought this would be a good opportunity. And the reason I chose that was because I was here on this campus on May 17th, 1954, and my friend, who was the staff member of the then Governor's Commission on Human Rights, told me that this is a very important day in the history of this country. And I said, well, why? She said that the Supreme Court in Brown versus Board of Education had just outlawed segregation in the public schools. Mm. And I thought, wow, that sounded important. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite understand the whole thing then. And so then when I got to the encampment, I attended the workshop, which was then taught by what I say was a Black school marm. You walked into her classroom, and boy, you better straighten up. No, she was firm, but and it was a workshop. We really did have speakers, and we made visits to all kinds of places in New York City. We went to the United Nations, and I turned on this fabulous sound system, and you could just turn a dial, you know, Russian, Chinese, you know, French, and I learned that, wow, all these universal languages there, and instantaneous translation. Mm-hmm. Well, at any rate, our school marm brought a black professor, Dr. Kenneth Clark, and his wife, Dr. Mamie Clark, in to talk to us. And he was making a presentation about the very famous doll experiment, as it was then known, and it still is. And it was a project where they took Black dolls and white dolls and showed them to various Black students in the South, as well as the ones in D.C., because this was in the early 50s, mm-hmm. and D.C. was still very segregated, and said to the little students, well, who would you like to play with? Who would you like to be friends with? Who's smart? A whole bunch of questions. And the little Black kids mostly chose the whites. And Thurgood Marshall used this as a demonstration of the damage of racism in Brown versus Board of Education. And so I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, someday I would like to do something of equal importance that affects Indians.
Right. And so at 21, here you are kind of being opened up to all of these issues of inequality and racism. What did you see as the greatest challenges for the Native American community back then in the 50s?
Well, I didn't see just one. There were many challenges. But let me finish answering your question. Then we visit the first question about Eleanor Roosevelt. Well, apartheid started in South Africa in 1948. This was 1956. And I knew that she was an important member of the United Nations and was involved in the Human Rights Commission. Someone recently told me that she was the chair of the commission. At any rate, she gave us a presentation. And it was wonderful going through, visiting the Roosevelt estate, and we had lunch on the lawn. Oh, it was so exciting. And then after she talked, she said, well, are there any questions? And I looked around because I'm a respectful person. Nobody was saying anything or raising their hand. So I thought to myself, well, this is the only time I'll ever have the opportunity to ask Eleanor Roosevelt a question. And so I asked her, Mrs. Roosevelt, I said, what about South Africa? They are killing their people. They're oppressing their people. And, you know, what should the UN do? Should they throw them out or what? And she looked at me, you know, kindly and gently and with great compassion and respect. And she said, well, you have to understand, change takes time. Violence is not the answer. Education is the way. Mm. And so Kenneth Clark and Eleanor Roosevelt deeply impressed me on very important issues. I was already on the help path due to my mother. She told me when I was under 10, Ada dear, you're an Indian and you were put on this planet for a purpose, and your responsibility is to help your people. And I said, well, okay, Mom. You know.
So what were some of those challenges that your people needed some leadership or support on?
Well, the eternal challenges of saving the land and saving the people. Indian people are still the poorest, by the census data, poorest people in the country. We have very high suicide rates, high poverty rates, high dropout rates. I get really tired of reciting these statistics. They're infuriating. Here we are in the richest country in the history of the world, and we have the first people here at the bottom of the barrel. I don't want to paint a completely negative picture because Indians are such an important part of our history, and we signed away millions of acres. My tribe, for example, 9.5 million acres of land, and we kept a small portion of that land as a reservation where we still live today. And so the culture, the spirit, the love of the land, the respect for the land, these are all important to the environmentalists, but they really obtained these ideas mostly from the American Indians. So now, today, people do not understand that they're not just the Indians. There are 560 tribes, over 560 federally recognized tribes. There are unrecognized tribes. There are state-recognized tribes. And there are various laws that, and policies that are the Indians are subjected to. We have the most laws of any group in our country. And so self-governance is extremely important. I used to teach a course here at the university, and to try to answer your question in 1 minute is a daunting task. But land and people and culture, there were laws against the language, against the religion. People ask me, for example, well, do you speak your language? I said, well, no. And I said, well, my father was put in a Catholic boarding school. It happened to be Catholic on our reservation, but there were other schools. And the idea was to kill the Indian, save the man. Richard Pratt, a Civil War veteran, started the boarding schools in late 1800s. And he thought that they should really destroy the culture. That's what he meant. and make everybody white. Well, at any rate, we had the boarding school. So my father spoke the language very well. He was put in there when he was 10 because his mother died during the flu pandemic of 1918. And I wanted to learn it, but he said, no. He said, I was a girl. I wanted to go fishing with him. No, you're a girl. No. I wanted to go hunting. No, you're a girl. Well, of course, I didn't melt. As you can tell, I have a very forceful personality. Even when I was a little kid, well, he's my father. I really would like to do this. But if he doesn't want to do it, well, okay. You know, I'll figure it out.
Well, and let me jump in, Ada, and to let people know we're talking with Ada Deer. She's celebrating her 80th birthday this year, and it's Native American Heritage Month. You weren't allowed to do a lot of things because you were a girl, but yet you were the first woman and the first Native American to do so many things. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
Well, let me say I've got my love and strength and inspiration from my mother. And she always supported me. And I have always been a questioning kid. And she answered my questions, and she told me I was an Indian, and she really strengthened that feeling of identity. I went, and I was the oldest of five. I have two brothers, two sisters, and trying to get this all in is really mm-hmm. difficult. But she told me, and I would pass this on to everybody, Ada Deer, be yourself. And because I didn't really understand this whole thing about teenage groups and all this stuff, because I never felt the I had to be part of a group and then and have this group think and all this stuff. So I'm kind of the lone ranger out there in my work and in my life. But that's okay. That's okay. I like myself. I know who I am. And I want everyone out there to look at themselves and figure out who they are and proceed on those paths. Everyone has strengths. Everybody has abilities. They have talents. But you have to work to develop them. And here I am talking with you as a proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I'm very open to new people and new ideas, and it's exciting to speak up and speak out and move the society along.
Well, I can't imagine a better place to leave it with those inspirational words. Ada Deer, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll be happy to return another time.
After another 80 years, maybe before. We'd love to have you back. That was Ada Deer, Menominee advocate, social worker, and the former head of the United States Bureau of Indian Affairs, talking about her experiences as an advocate for civil rights and equality.